When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, I'm running a little slow today.
I gotta say, man, you sound a little rough.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, on the bright side, I can. Despite the effect of me sounding like I got one foot in the grave, I can pull off the whole "I'm Batman."
Kind of, yeah.
Sort of.
You kind of sound like one of those folks that've been smoking menthols.
Oh yeah.
For the last 40 years. All right, well, here's to good health. Howdy, folks, and welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad. We are a podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. We are your hosts, Woody Brown.
And Tyler Bentz.
Hey, man.
Hey. Man,
I love it when your vocal range is either right at where mine is or slightly lower even. That's when you can tell you're not feeling good.
Yeah, for sure. Woke up yesterday feeling a little weird. Mm. Like, you know how you can always kind of tell when you're going to lose your voice?
Like the day before.
It was like one of those days. And then, but I had high hopes. I was like, well, I'll probably wake up and it'll be gone. Mm. And it was not. So, happy Valentine's Day week to you.
Well, for whatever reason, man, and I'm not sure, I feel like when I was a kid, I would lose my voice quite often. It almost never happens to me. And I don't know if it's because of that, oh, here I go, look at this. My voice is like cracking as I say this. This is what happens when you're trying to tempt the fate here. Anyway, it almost never happens to me. And I mean, being a vocalist in a band, that was my worst nightmare. Because at that point, it's what am I supposed to do, you know? And so, like, you would learn all these tricks of the trade, like, you know, of course, the tea and the honey. And sometimes you just be like, you know, I'm just going to, I don't know, give me a mix of it all. And I'm just going to try to get up there because that's your only job. And so, you know, I would try not to use my voice during the day and be around all the smokers and breathing all that garbage in. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is kind of a worst nightmare scenario. And now here we are, both of us using our vocal cords on a podcast. And but the good news is, man, don't worry. Like a shot in the arm, not only am I going to, I think, hopefully improve your mood here, but also I'll take the lead on this one and do most of the talking today.
Nice.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be easier to edit that way anyway. So.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
That's rude.
That way you can just kind of sit back and relax. But
with 60% less.
Right. The cool thing about, I'll say this. The way I came up with today's topic really was really almost a direct effect of, I would say, the last maybe, I don't know, man, 2 months worth of movie nights with my son. He's getting to be that age now where it's like, I don't think I can be considered a bad dad by sort of saying, like, you know what? It's time that you watch this super cool R-rated movie. We'll kind of fast forward through the weird stuff. Or I'll tell you to, like, look away during the super violent stuff. But there's just some franchises, man, that, like, he's just, it's that time. You know? Yeah. I was either his age or younger even with some of these things.
Sure.
And so I kind of put together a list of about 10 of sort of, I mean, again, I'm going to speak for you, man, not just because your voice is out, but I know you'll agree. Some of our top favorite sci-fi movies that came out in the 80s and 90s. And again, because I've recently watched them, I noticed that, like, there is so much that these movies kind of get away with in terms of explaining how things go or how they work. It's almost like the movies are so good that as the audience, because these are big, you'll see, folks, as we get into this, these are movies that were humongous. And as an audience, we're just like, who cares? You know? Mm-hmm. If we were listening to this as like a song, it'd be like, you know, the chorus and everything is just so good that the details don't matter as much, right?
Yeah, right.
And I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, they didn't matter then. And even now as an adult, sometimes, especially with these movies, it's kind of like, who cares?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess we should just dive right in, right?
Yeah, dude. Let's get into
it. Okay. So, if you guys are fellow movie buffs, and even if you don't like quote-unquote sci-fi, I think some of these, you know, more than likely, again, because of just how commercially humongous they were, chances are, if you're a listener of our show, you've seen these movies. There might be one or two that you're like, I actually don't know if I have seen that or, you know, whatever. In a lot of 80s and 90s movies, especially the 80s, there are moments that, be it sci-fi or horror or any genre really, where I don't even want to say artistic license because that might be a stretch even. There's some movie premises and there's some things that they just kind of get away with that you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes with sci-fi though, there is a little element of like, you got to explain to me a little bit so that I can believe. It's kind of like what we talked about last week, okay? Last week, we were talking about folklore.
Hear Woody and Tyler talk about this rad folklore on That Would Be Rad, Season 4, Episode 2, Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods.
And how in these like old stories and old tales, there's got to be, or there typically is a little like sort of nugget of truth. And it allows that connective tissue between like truth and legend. I feel like that always works a little bit better. And with these movies, I feel like that's the same thing. There's a moment where the writer or the director just has to kind of say, you know what? Hopefully they can suspend the disbelief here. Yeah. Let's focus on, you know, the parts that we can kind of control and not really get too deep into the weeds of it all.
Yeah.
All right. So first up, this is a movie that my son and I watched, I mean, actually several months ago. I kind of broke him in, and I figured I'd start with this one with him because this is actually a sequel in this franchise, okay? And I figured, I just felt like, you know, me personally, I definitely liked the sequel better when it came out, or at least I connected to it better at the time. And I'm talking
Can I take a guess?
You can take a guess.
Terminator 2.
Yes. Yeah. You got it right, man. Mm-hmm.
He's all alone. You have to protect him.
They know its face.
Stay here. I'll be back.
They know its mission. But there's one thing they don't know. This time, there are two. Terminator 2. Programmed to destroy. The other programmed to protect.
For me, dude, when that came out, you're talking early 90s.
Yep.
I was kind of like close to that age of John Connor anyway. It was just easy to relate to. He was so cool. He had the dirt bike. They're listening to Guns N' Roses.
Gray hair.
T-1000. I mean,
all of us had his haircut.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everything from like even just I think Afterburner was it the Afterburner game that they're playing in the arcade, or was it Top Gun? I think it was Afterburner.
Maybe, yeah.
Like the whole thing kind of moved with it and stuff.
Yeah,
it's almost like a flight simulator.
Yeah,
super cool. Well, all right, let's break down Terminator 2 for just a quick second in terms of what they kind of pulled on us and got away with, really, because again, this movie is amazing. My son was just instantly obsessed. I think we talked about it either over on the Patreon or at least on a show where in terms of like it being rated R, besides like one or two, I think maybe two moments where there's some, you know, kind of gore, I guess. Mm-hmm. The violence is kind of cheesy, really. There's no blood when people get shot. There's just those, like, you know, those special effects sort of body explosions.
Yeah. Wait, that was I didn't realize that was rated R.
Oh, yeah. And really, it's the F-bombs that they're dropping in there for no reason, and super silly.
Well, and probably, too, like, the scene which, I mean, this scene definitely stuck with me. You know, where she's having, like, the dream or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, everybody just gets, like, vaporized.
Yeah, it's intense, man.
That could have added to it.
So, Sarah Connor, just to remind everybody, again, if you haven't watched any of the Terminator movies in a while, I suggest go back and watch them. They're excellent. Mm-hmm. Sarah Connor, John Connor's
movie. Well, not all of them.
You know what? I'm going to get to that, too, because I want to know which one you're talking about.
Okay.
But, so, Sarah Connor, she's experienced the things that happen in Terminator 1, and we'll talk about Terminator. I'll spoil it for you. Terminator 1's also on this list. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, his version of the Terminator, has come back to actually protect Sarah and John from the T-1000, right? Mm-hmm. Sarah's bright idea is that if she takes out this guy named Miles Dyson, he's like the brain behind Skynet, and she remembers that name. He essentially, by taking him out, well, then he can't help create this entire killer robot apocalypse that happens, which sounds like a pretty feasible plan. Mm-hmm. But in the movie, what happens is Sarah goes on her mission to, you know, take Dyson out. And when she gets there, she finds out that he has been tinkering with the Terminator tech, kind of using bits and stuff that were left over from the original Terminator movie. And essentially, if that first Terminator never kind of came in, then we wouldn't have any Terminators to worry about in the first place, which, you know, is this whole existential crisis. So let's talk about this, like, reprogrammed Terminator. So in other words, in the first movie, they destroy him, they kill him. Yay, they're successful. But at some point, they sent back not only the Terminators, sent back not only a new model, the T-1000, the one that's made of liquid metal, it still holds up, man.
Yeah.
So good.
Yep.
But they also sent back a reprogrammed Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that's actually, I think, the T-101, I think is his model number. Mm. And your mind can start to do this, like, loop thing that just kind of, again, I think this is why they leave it all out and just don't end up explaining it to you, is because if you think about it, they're sending back a Terminator that looks like the one that Sarah Connor was traumatized by initially, right?
Right.
She's going to go into, like, and she kind of does, frankly, but she's going to go nuts. But if she doesn't have this initial run-in with the Terminator, she wouldn't become the bad A warrior that she does become. She wouldn't train John to fight them. And then he wouldn't send back one to protect him. And then it's weird because John also exists because he is Kyle Reese's son. Kyle Reese was sent back to protect Sarah by John. John sent him back in the first place. Now, if you go further in the franchise, and I think this is what you were talking about, this technically isn't an 80s and 90s sci-fi movie, but T3, right? Mm-hmm. They recast John Connor. I forget the kid's name. I don't care for him.
Yeah, I can't. Like, what's weird about it is I just remember hating it. That's the, like, Rise of the Machines.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just remember, like, it not having any of that sort of, like, flavor that T2 had.
Yeah, so, and again, this was not my intent here to talk about that movie, but I kind of want to because I felt the exact same way as you. In fact, last weekend, you know, my son and I were trying to figure out, like, what should we watch? And he said, well, what about T3? And I was pulling up all the other Terminator movies because you've got, like, Dark Fate. And then what was the other one?
What was the latest one? Or no, maybe not the latest, but the one before that.
So you've got Terminator Salvation, which has Christian Bale. Terminator Genesis, which has Jason Clarke and Emilia Clarke.
Right.
That one came out in 2015. And then Dark Fate, which was the most recent one.
Oh, no, no, no. It was. I really liked Dark Fate.
Dark Fate was the one that, again, I think we talked about it that at some point on the show, but it was.
It was great.
Yeah. I think, I want to say that James Cameron came in to produce it.
Right.
He didn't direct it, but I think he had something more hands-on to do, and it just sort of, quote-unquote, bleeds off the page. I mean, you can tell.
Yeah.
Now, here's what I was going to say about T3.
Okay.
I remember it just like you do. I hated it, other than Claire Danes, who, man alive, I still have a massive crush on. I don't know.
Yeah.
Totally, like, not on my list of, like, quote-unquote, my type, but unreal. Anyway.
Well, I mean, my so-called life was like...
Yeah, dude. That Romeo and Juliet, man, come on. Yeah. Amazing.
It placed her in... I mean, same with, like, Jared Leto, too, or Leto.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we first saw him, but continue.
Yeah, so I was kind of listing off the other ones, and we were watching the trailers of them, and he's like, yeah, but I really... He's very, like... I don't know about fundamental... He's very, like, kind of... how I would imagine I was when I was a kid. I don't really remember, but he wants to watch them all.
Like
in order. Yeah, he's by the book about it, man. He's specific. He's like, no, I really think I should watch T3 so that I can just appreciate it more. I'm like, okay, you sold it to me. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, mentally, I'm like, oh gosh, I hate this one. Dude, I gotta say, man, not only is it not as sort of far removed, other than the recasting of the character of John Connor, it's actually pretty awesome because it explains, yeah, dude, it explains a lot of what I'm talking about here in terms of the almost like a bootstrap paradox, I guess, that happens within Terminator 2. It actually, it doesn't necessarily explain some of this stuff, but there is a new kind of T-1000. It is cheesy in a lot of ways. It's very early 2000s, even just like the production quality, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ultimately, it's not as bad as I remembered it being, and he enjoyed it.
Mm.
We also started watching Genesis, and he enjoyed that. That's the one where they actually show the moment that John Connor saves Kyle Reese as, like, he's a little boy. He basically helps to raise and train him and tells him, like, you've got to go back and find or help Sarah Connor. It's pretty cool. And when he does, there's a twist because it's different. It's a different reality. And so because of all the things that they've changed previously. So it's really cool. It's worth going back and watching those for sure.
I remember liking Genesis, but I remember it like kind of being like pretty slow.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes it's just hard because we're such, both you and I, my wife included, we're such Terminator fans.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Godzilla for me. Like, I'll watch it. It doesn't matter, except for the Sarah Connor Chronicles. It was like a TV show. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the movies, man, I'll watch. I don't really care. They're so cool. Big trucks, explosions, Terminators.
Oh, yeah.
It's just amazing.
Which, I mean, you know, going back to like the newest one, like they really brought all that back, which was cool.
All right. Before we get into the next one.
Wait a minute, real quick. Are we not like finishing up Terminator?
I mean, we finished up Terminator 2. The main thing is just that, like, it's just like that weird cycle of like, well, the way they present it in Terminator 2 is that, you know, they don't really explain how it doesn't fit a perfect timeline. And they kind of do that a little bit later in T3 and stuff. But, you know, how did they reprogram it? Why did they send him back? Why didn't they just send back one that was just different looking? Or, you know, I don't know, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I will say, like, when she first sees him in the mental ward, like, man, like, the acting and, like, just the cinematography, like, you really feel, like, genuine, like, fear.
Yeah, it's amazing,
it's awesome.
Man. Yeah. The whole thing is just, like, how does John Connor, I don't know, man. It starts, go back and watch it. It starts to get very, like, wait a minute now. How does this work if that worked, you know? And then...
Yeah.
It kind of makes more sense further down the line. And I think they kind of figured that part out. And I think they kind of like retconned a little bit. And they're like, oh, yeah, that doesn't make sense. This is some good content that we can use. All right, before we get into this next one, I want to talk about Quest. Now, for all of our fellow Dungeons & Dragons fans and listeners and Tyler, I'm not talking about the one-on-one D&D session that I ran for you, which was awesome, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about a game changer that we stumbled upon recently, and that is Magic Mind.
Yeah.
We all go through this. We're struggling to focus throughout the day. Our energy levels, they're all over the place. Then boom, Magic Mind swoops in like Spider-Man himself, and it's the elixir that kicks procrastination to the curb and amps up your morning mojo. Now, I know we've been talking about it a lot lately, and yes, they are sponsoring this episode. But like we say time and time again, we're not going to really talk about anything that we don't actually believe in ourselves.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to sort of be a shill for a product if we haven't tried it.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. The point is that it's easy enough to kind of blend into my daily routine. It tastes amazing. Truly, it's become like the secret sauce to my focus, attention, and energy. Not just as a content creator, but as a professional in the professional world, as a dad.
Yeah.
It's just like, man, there's not enough hours in the day. Sometimes just it doesn't seem like we can get it all done, but this just helps make me not only energized, but also it's that weird combo that I think I've never experienced before, but with this, which is I'm focused, but I'm not like antsy or anxious because it's just so much caffeine that my body can't handle it kind of thing.
Right. Well, I got to say also that as you can tell, I'm sick today. I woke up feeling awful. And I mean, the only reason that I'm even like on this episode is because of Magic Mind.
There you go, man. It gave you the kick you needed.
Sure did.
And we're not going to keep this all to ourselves, even though it's our secret formula or our secret weapon. We want to kind of give you the opportunity to kind of have that in your corner. So all you have to do to level up your day is head on over to magicmind.com/brad and join the squad of high achievers. You can get yourself a humongous 56% off your first subscription or 20% off of a single purchase using the code BRAD20, BRAD in all caps, and then the number 20. Again, that's www.magicmind.com/BRAD and use the special code BRAD20 for your discount. All right, let's get back to it. This movie, dude, I mean, it like brings a smile to my face whenever I just think about this movie for so many reasons. But this is a Spielberg, like, masterpiece, in my opinion. And we're talking about Jurassic Park. Mm.
There it is.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
The most phenomenal discovery of our time.
How'd you do this?
Becomes the greatest adventure of all time.
Can I touch it?
Sure.
Universal Pictures presents.
Now, sure, there are plot holes and there's gaps here and there. I'm not really interested in kind of like ripping it to shreds, but we're talking about Spielberg here, man. He's a legend. And the only real gripe I always had, and I think the internet has too, about Jurassic Park, not the only one when I'm talking about the internet, but for me personally, is that scene at the very end. Now, again, this is one of my favorite scenes ever. It's iconic. It's epic. It's incredible, okay? But the scene I'm talking about is when the T-Rex comes in and accidentally saves the day when he like grabs one of the raptors as these guys are trying to escape from the thing. Mm-hmm. And then that banner like floats down and it's just like, you know, Jurassic Park. And it's just like a huge roar. Well, how in the world, bro, did the T-Rex get into the building?
Oh, weird.
Is there just like a giant sized T-Rex door somewhere to get into the museum?
Interesting.
You see what I'm saying?
I do see what you're saying.
Here's the thing. I would have read that storyboard and seen the scene that he had in mind and just be like, who cares? Doing it.
Yeah. Well, one thing too that I've actually just discovered recently is, do you want to know how, one of the things that they, or one of the animals that they used to like create that like growl
Man, I don't remember. I know that there's like a baby elephant.
Maybe. I mean, it was like sort of a synthesis of like a bunch of stuff,
yeah.
But like the main, like when you hear that weird like rumbling, like brum, 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 like almost like
that's great.
I mean, that's terrible, I know, but
bum, 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 bum.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's almost like a, it's not really like a growl. It's more of like a, when it's, I don't even know where it would be at, but I just watched this thing and basically they used like koala bears.
Oh, wow.
Which make these like funny high-pitched like sort of growls, but like they do this thing where like they're, it's kind of like how like an emu will make those like internal kind of growl kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a baby koala.
I'm Gary Rydstrom. I was the sound designer and mixer on Jurassic Park.
Hey!
They wanted me to do some of the very earliest design of what the dinosaurs might sound like. I did talk to scientists because I figured I should do some research. You know, what do you think dinosaurs sounded like? And every scientist I found, I don't know. I didn't want to create, synthesize artificially anything, so I just collected as large a library of real animal sounds as I could. Oh, the spitter, it's like a three-layer personality. And so cute, and then vicious, and a killer.
I thought you were one of your big brothers. You're not so bad.
So swans. And this is a dog. So you put them together, and then he gets a little more personality. The chirps, this is a baby ostrich. It changes gears and have more of a broadband pink noise sound. So when it finally goes for it, which is a rattlesnake. For the raptor, recorded baby dolphins. I wanted to give it low frequency. This is a walrus. So then again, you add that to the scream. Personality-wise, the raptor had to sound like it was smart.
Clever girl.
And could communicate and, you know, sort of bark to each other and that kind of thing. This movie was all real animals, except for I have a friend named Dietrich Smith who made the sound with his mouth. He made this sound that became the raptor. Well, the T-Rex, you take... What is that? That's a lion, but pitched down. This is an alligator. But the key to this thing was this. So this cute baby elephant, it's got personality. Find a way to kind of put them together. It's nice to do something that sticks around. As I was starting work on this one, even before anything was shot, I realized this is going to be a good one. Steven Spielberg, a best-selling book, a great idea. This is pretty much a home run. So it felt like I was being given the key to a candy store and just say, you know, go ahead, eat whatever you want.
Those old school sound effects artists, man,
amazing.
Are incredible. I really encourage everybody. This kind of stuff, these behind the scenes sound effects artist stuff, you can find it on YouTube. Dude, it is incredible how they came up with all of these things, man.
Yeah.
I mean, even, you know, Star Wars, for example, I especially like it whenever they just are blending so many sounds together to achieve the sound that we all know. For example, like, the sound that a TIE fighter makes when it flies by. You got to go look that up. It's super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, a couple months ago, we talked about this movie because arguably it's a Christmas movie, and that is Gremlins.
Yeah.
You got these Mogwais. This is probably one of the cutest little creatures of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's rules involved. Don't feed them after midnight or else they... again, turn into gremlins or, you know, spill water on all that. But what's funny is if you start thinking about it, it's like, what exactly sort of counts as, quote, after midnight? You know, is there like a universal time zone that all of the Mogwai brains sort of sync up with? Or do they just kind of wing it? Are they paying attention to the clock? Is it Eastern time or, you know, I guess it would be Central time because aren't they in Chicago? No. Are they in a New York suburb?
God. No, I think it is Chicago.
So it's like, what happens if you took a Mogwai with you on like a, you know, international adventure? You cross the international dateline, you kind of, you know what I mean? what does it all mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. So that's one thing that I've always kind of wondered, like, is it just, again, if you focus too heavily on this kind of stuff, you know, it kind of ruins the movies for you. But again, the movies are so good, you don't have to.
Yeah, I also kind of think that, I mean, especially, this especially sort of pertains to, like, the Terminator franchise. But, mm-hmm. like, I've got to say, like, you know, especially your typical, you know, sci-fi fan in, like, the, you know, 2020s, like us, like, we're very aware of, like, the grandfather paradox or the bootstrap paradox. And so, like, mm-hmm. like, whether that's even, like, a real thing or not, it is a, like, a trope in sort of, you know, popular culture mm-hmm. when dealing with, like, time travel in movies and film and stuff. So I feel like that kind of stuff could have been, you know, the disbelief could have been suspended a lot easier back then, because a lot of that stuff was you know, kind of unknown, especially yeah. for like pretty like younger kids and stuff, yeah. you know.
Case in point, us. Yeah, right? Exactly. I mean, like, I had yeah. no idea about that stuff. It's yeah, just no. like, oh yeah, yeah, I think they could. And I think the way they explain certain things mm-hmm. a lot of times kind of just was an easy enough sort of, yeah, that makes sense, you know. This one, though, like, going back again, this is a movie that I saw probably too young. I mean, I think it's just a little too serious to enjoy as a kid, but mm-hmm. I thought it was a really cool movie, especially visually, and that's The Abyss.
Oh, yeah.
The Abyss is an experience like no other, writes Peter Travers of Rolling Stone magazine. It's the greatest underwater adventure ever filmed, the most consistently enthralling of the summer blockbusters, one of the best pictures of the year. It's also something even more unexpected. A love story of shattering impact. The Abyss.
I mean, I think I appreciate it more now / in my early 20s, you know, as an adult, essentially, than I did when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I thought it was cool, but it was just kind of like, it wouldn't be the movie that I'd be like, ooh, can we pop this in the VCR? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
growing up, like getting older, it's very fascinating and it's cool. And at the same time, it has like a scene that's one of the most terrifying scenes ever. And that's probably really why I didn't watch it all the time. When you basically have to force yourself to drown to inhale the liquid to be able to breathe in that high pressure, yeah. right? So yeah. that's what this kind of deals with, right? So for those of you that haven't seen it in a while or haven't seen it at all, the situation is that there is this like underwater station that is so yeah. deep that humans essentially would just be crushed under the pressure, or they wouldn't be able to live down there at all. And what you can kind of come to find out is, you know, they have this interaction with aliens and stuff. Well, at the very end of the movie, these aliens come in, they bring this ship up to the surface, and it really is sort of like no big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of hops out of the ship and they just look normal as can be. One of the characters actually says, well, he kind of brings up the whole like depressurization thing, and they just kind of wave it off with like, the aliens must have done something to us. And that's it, you know?
Are you serious?
Dead serious. So
wow.
I guess like the budget was really spent on the visual effects, which at the time, dude, fantastic.
Well, fantastic. And also probably like, I mean, clearly the inspiration for the T-1000.
Oh, for sure, man.
That liquid metal kind of thing.
Let me see. And that's also James Cameron, right?
Yeah, it's also Cameron, yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, dude, James Cameron, I mean, he's a genius, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I say that, but then I feel like I recently read something that was like, hey, isn't this movie sort of just the retelling of this? Was it Avatar?
Yeah, it's probably the Avatar is basically Fern Gully.
Dances with Wolves.
Or Dances with Wolves, or even like Pocahontas, I guess, yeah. a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's like, you know, that Joseph Campbell, like, hero's journey
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
kind of archetype. So it's not like, I mean, you know, all of these movies have that similar sort of,
yeah.
they can all be lumped into, you know, one of those
yeah.
archetypes.
For sure.
But no, the special effects for sure, dude, were I don't know, so cool and interesting. And then I feel like with with T2, he just like took it and like ran with it.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, also, I don't think you've read, well, maybe I'll let you borrow it. There's a book, a comic that came out a while, well, several years ago now, but from Scott Snyder, who did all of the Batman, like Court of Owls stuff. Him and then Sean Gordon Murphy, called The Wake. And it's similar to that. It's kind of like an underwater, like, you know, base. And, you know, there's this type of like alien presence slash like mermaid. It's really good. It's really cool.
I love those kind of movies that are basically, I mean, okay, so the next one I was going to talk about is Alien. Mm. And I think technically that came out before 1980, right? Is it like,
yeah,
did that come out in 79?
Yeah, it's older, yeah.
Anyhow, the end scene really is kind of like the one where you're like, well, they never really explained that. And that is just that, like, you know, Ripley's about to just, you know, blast off into the sunset. And then we're kind of given that, I guess, teaser for a future, or like a cliffhanger, where you kind of can tell that, uh-oh, the creature's in the pod with her.
Oh, right, yeah.
But there's no, like, it doesn't really line up in terms of, like, how did it get there? How did it get past, like, the doors and then past Ripley in the first place and all that? All that being said, and this as an example, which is an excuse to talk about how much I love this movie. One of the things I loved about Alien was that it's basically like a slasher film where the alien is the, you know,
just kind of going around
the slasher, the murderer. Yeah.
Taking people out.
And they're in this contained, but what's cool about it is, and a lot of times, you know, a lot of those old slasher movies will do this where you can, and it reminds me of Dungeons and Dragons in a way, as a DM. It's
guard,
like,
rails.
If you can control, if you can keep them from escaping, like put these characters in an environment where, you know, the setting itself is working against them. It's also an enemy. Mm. And then they have to kind of navigate that while at the same time staying alive, because this person has just got them trapped. And so it's just this, because I was trying to explain this movie. This is one that I have not shown my almost 12-year-old yet, because,
yeah,
you know, it pretty much is gore. And
well, I would almost say, I mean, number, like, Aliens, the second one is
the second one, yeah.
I mean, it's also like pretty gory, but I think it would probably actually be easier to show him that one first.
Maybe, man, but God, the first one is just so good, dude.
Oh, no, it's amazing. But
I mean,
but just for the second one's like straight up action movie.
Yeah.
Really, you know.
That's another one of those James Cameron. So, you know, Ridley Scott did the first Alien. Mm-hmm. And then James Cameron came in for the second one. And like, you can tell immediately because of the huge like machine things that he's, you know, the Marines use.
Kind of thing,
dude, it's so cool.
It's amazing.
So anyways, you know, that's the big thing about Alien is like, how in the world did it get in there?
Mm-hmm. Have we talked, like, what are your thoughts on like the Prometheus movies?
You know, there's a handful of franchises that no matter what, I'm going to watch the movies because I just love them. I love the lore and all that. I mean, I liked them.
Yeah.
They were, you know, interesting. I really like, I think her name's Noemi Rapace. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but she's the girl that played the original version of the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Oh,
the
right.
International version. She's pretty awesome.
Yeah, she is cool.
And great actress. I mean, and
Michael Fassbender's awesome.
Michael Fassbender's amazing as an android, really.
Yeah. I know like a lot of like purists, I think, like had some issues with it, but man, I think they're really great. I love like the, I mean, it kind of takes it back to like the tone of like the very first one, like the Ridley Scott kind of vibe where it's, there's this sort of weird like high art kind of like sheen to it. Like it sort of feels like, I mean, maybe not the second one's like less so, I guess, but like, I don't know, it feels almost like an art film to some degree and at times, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so beautifully shot too. Like, I think it's in Iceland, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's in like the engineers and like that whole thing was really cool.
Yeah, it was cool, man. And like, I'm curious, I haven't really looked too far into like the criticism behind it all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you remember offhand what people had a problem with?
I think the issue was like mainly that you know, you didn't have like enough aliens, especially in that when, you know, the very first one, like the Prometheus comes out. But the second one, I remember seeing in the theater, like I really liked it and it was like full of aliens. So
I need to rewatch that one. I don't remember it.
Yeah, I remember the second one less too, but I remember really liking it. Like anything that has, and you know, saying what I'm about to say, like, is kind of a testament to like Woody and I, like our obsession with like folklore and like, you know, like anthropology and all that. But anytime like you can sort of take this like modern thing and then pair it with like a discovery of like that thing in like hieroglyphs or like cave paintings, like I'm sold every time.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So,
which dude, I mean, well, we'll have to talk about that a little bit on another day, whenever you guys are a little bit past some of the stuff that's going on in the D&D campaign, because I mean, I'm basically using elements of all this stuff.
I love it.
And it's so much fun.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
It's a pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire. Vampire.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you?
Fighters for truth, justice, and the American way.
Hey, this is Woody.
And this is Tyler. And you're listening to That Would Be Rad.
And now, back to our show. You know, I said I was going to talk about the Terminator. Ultimately, I think what I've kind of found out about this episode was I'd rather just kind of talk about the movies in a way. I mean, there are issues with the original Terminator. Like, you know, this is a guy that's coming out of the future. And I think it's probably, again, because it was, when did this come out? In like 84, I think. You know, you're writing a movie about a killer cyborg that's coming out of the future. And I got to say, when you go back and watch this first one, I think you'll agree, it's kind of shocking, dude, that it came out in 84. It's actually pretty dang good in terms of, you know, effects. Now, yes, there are some moments where you're like, oh man, they're using an animated version of, like, they will do stop motion when the Terminator's just like fully metal and, it's walking around.
Yeah.
But then they'll do this thing where they do a shot where it's waist up and it's just kind of like, you can kind of see it and it's a real, you can tell that it's an actual,
it's a real
huge
thing.
Life-size practical effect.
Yeah.
And I wish they would have just done that the whole time because it looks so good.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Like, you're talking about the scenes where it shows like the dystopian future.
Well, no. So there's this part where they're like walking down this hall. And by the way, again, I never noticed this. I never remembered it. But going back and revisiting these with my son has kind of forced me to watch them kind of close to one another. And there's a lot of sort of, it's almost like parallel scenes throughout the first one that are just revisited in the second one. So it's like, I don't feel bad now letting him watch the second one first and then going back because he wanted to see the original, watching the first one. Don't worry, folks. I fast-forwarded through the Sarah Connor nudity scene, which was kind of weird because he's like, no, wait a second, Dad. The movie's over? How did he become? The guy's dead? How did he become? And I was like, we'll talk about that later, son. Ask your mom. That's another day. Anyway, the Terminator is now, he's just only metal. And he's coming down this hallway. And so that's what they're showing. And it looks like something from Clash of the Titans. I mean, like just very hardcore stop animation.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, it's easy for especially him, my son, to kind of laugh at it. He still enjoys it and appreciates it. But like at this level of technology now that exists, very elementary in terms of the effects, man.
Well, I also feel like the scenes, I think they do that also on the scenes where it shows like the future and you see all like the Skynet, like, you know, the like aircraft flying around with their searchlights. And then you see like the soldier, like the sort of roaming around like, like the Terminators.
Yeah. No, they definitely do. It's for whatever reason, those look a little bit better, but yeah. But then like, I mean, T2 came out, I think it was, like 8 years later. And so that adjustment in technology was, I mean, unbelievable, man. the difference.
Which, what was the gap between T2 and then T3 Rise of the Machines? Because I think it was like pretty far.
Yeah, about the same. So T3 came out in 2003, so 11 years.
Wow. That's so bizarre to me, because that movie was such a like phenomenon. It's odd that like they wait so long to do that stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Which, I mean, Cameron's kind of, I guess, known for at this point.
You know? Yeah. If he can't get the shots that he wants.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the movies, I guess one of the franchises that, yes, they explain things, but just do it in such a sort of simplistic way. Mm. Of course, is our beloved Back to the Future movies.
Oh, yeah.
They explain time travel in a way that's so easy for younger audiences to comprehend, you know, even the dangers of it, really.
Yeah.
That, like, there's certain things that, sure, they don't necessarily make sense. And they kind of just, you know, like the fact that like the older Biff and Back to the Future 2 just kind of figures out how to operate Doc's time machine on his own.
Oh, right.
You know,
I've
like.
Never thought about that.
Imagine, because he's like really old at that point in the movie. Imagine my grandfather, your grandfather, just jumping into a car that also happened to be a time machine and just figuring out how to get to a different year. They would be like, what the heck is this? How do you turn on the radio?
Dude, I mean.
They got George Strait on this thing?
Yeah, I mean, my grandpa, like, hopping in, like, our car now would be like, what is going on?
Exactly.
Like, where does the key go? Like, the push button, you know, keyless.
All I can figure out is how to put the seatbelt on.
That's it.
And I don't wear those because that's for pansies. That's it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of those, that's an example of Back to the Future 2 being kind of like, wait a minute, how did he figure that out? And not just like once, but like, you know, traveled, talked to the younger version of himself, traveled back. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever taught him. There's no manual underneath the seat, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
One thing that's kind of neat, trivia-wise, about Back to the Future 2, though, is, did you know this? I'm sure you did. The whole Crispin Glover thing?
I don't know.
I'm going to warn you. You can't unsee this from here out.
Oh, man.
I mean, I was only, like, this is as fresh as just like a couple years ago did I discover this fact, and I was blown away. So, for those of you that don't remember, Crispin Glover is the guy that plays George McFly.
Such a weird and brilliant actor.
Exactly. And with the sort of success of Back to the Future 1, there was a lot of actors within the movie, Jennifer being one of them, that was replaced then by Elizabeth Shue played Jennifer in the second one. Mm-hmm. Well, there was another casting replacement, my man, and that was Crispin Glover. He actually does not play the older version of George McFly that is essentially new footage, you know, from the future, when he's like old and he's upside down and he's in that back thing. He's like, well, I threw my back out the other day.
Hi, son.
Dad, what the hell happened? You throw your back out again?
Oh, I was out on the golf course. And
Dad, I told you to watch that backswing.
No, he was hit by a car. It just fell out of the sky. He could have been killed.
And I was two under par.
I don't know what this world is coming to.
You know what I'm talking about?
Marty,
he comes floating in upside down. Whenever they're at Marty's house?
I can kind of see it, but that's not him.
That's not him. They've got an actor that has, like, prosthetics on his face to make him look more like him. And then it's also not him in the scenes when Marty goes back to the 1950s. And in the scenes that they're not using, like, previously shot footage from the first one, which is also kind of groundbreaking, too, how they use that and split screen it and stuff. But there's that scene where he like punches Biff out and saves Lorraine. Mm-hmm. It's not Crispin Glover.
I'm not in the.
Do you think you'll ever look back and have good memories about that film?
I'm not in. Just to be very clear, I'm only in the first film. I was not in the second or third film. That's is very, very, very endlessly frustrating. Is that what they did was illegal, and I have to always inform people years and years later, now, you know, that this was not me, which is very frustrating. And there's one producer in particular named Bob Gale who has no repentance on the fact that he was involved in illegal activity. And he said, you know, he's made lies up to try to absolve himself for what he did that was illegal. You know, it's a common thing that criminals will do, where they'll blame the victim of their criminal activity. Well, Bob Gale blames the person of his illegal action for his illegal actions. It's something people really should hold Bob Gale accountable for, because it's one thing to do something, you know, that's wrong, and you can forgive that. But then to, for years after that, not only have not account for that one has done something illegal, but then to blame the person that they stole from for the reason of doing an illegal thing. There's always options before doing something illegal. And Bob Gale doesn't seem to account for that. So that part is frustrating, unfortunately. Had the only been working with Robert Zemeckis and there was the first film, you know, I'd be there at the reunion smiling and happy. But specifically because of the way Bob Gale's dealt with this, it's just very wrong.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, dude. And I've got to say, but like, it's crazy. But then once you see it, you're like, how did I not notice this before?
Yeah, I never, like, I just never would have even assumed that he wasn't in it.
Yep.
That's crazy.
So with like different camera angles, prosthetics, makeup, they basically just transformed this dude that was kind of already a doppelganger. Wow. And just continued going. Now, this turned into a huge lawsuit that Glover then filed against the producers, alleging that they would, you know, they were using his likeness without his permission, they didn't adequately compensate him. It was like a big deal about stand-ins and lookalikes and the ethics behind it all.
Which, I mean, I will say, like, I think, I mean, he is such like, I mean, you can just tell he's like, just sort of, he's probably just a weird dude, super quirky, super like unusual. And so, I mean, you gotta say, like, if they're like, you know, quote unquote, like copying that, his performance, I mean, I think he had a right to go after him.
Right. Yeah.
So,
and of course, everybody listening, I'm sure, knows this one, Tyler, as well. Trivia about Back to the Future 1, of course, I think it's pretty well known now that Eric Stoltz was the first version of Marty McFly. In fact, I think they filmed almost all of the movie with him as Marty. Mm. And then when they were like sort of watching it back, they were like, I don't think so. And they reshot the entire thing, dude.
God, I mean, it definitely was like for the best, for the sake of like pop culture, but man, like, just imagine being that guy. And, like, you film the whole thing. You're like, man, this thing's going to be huge. You've told all your friends. And then,
yeah.
Oh, by the way, we're taking everything you filmed out.
Yeah.
Yikes.
I mean, luckily I was kind of saved from that amount of humiliation and disappointment whenever I auditioned and got, quote unquote, hired for that Dunkin' Donuts commercial.
Right.
Told everybody, hey guys, I'm filling out the SAG forms now.
Yeah.
Next step, Hollywood.
Here we go.
And then I get back down to from the mountains in North Georgia where I have service, and I get that infamous voicemail pop up, and I'm like, oh, I missed the call. Same number from the guy. I guess he's wanting my measurements or maybe a forwarding address to send
the trophy.
Send the check, send the advance.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to it. We decided to go in another direction.
Ouch.
Welcome to Hollywood, huh?
Yeah, that'll get you.
All right, now, I don't know how long it's been since you've seen this movie, but I have to admit, this is one of those movies that I actually didn't really see as a kid in the 80s. And the only reason I kind of, well, not the only reason, but one of the reasons why I started, or I saw it, you know, within the last, you know, 10 years or so, was whenever I started getting back into VHS, and it was just one of those hard to get movies. And that is the movie
Basic Instinct.
No, that's the movie They Live.
You know, yeah, I'm very embarrassed about this as all, also. Mm-hmm. I've only seen like half of the movie.
You gotta watch it, man. It's really cool. It's John Carpenter. As I get older, as I appreciate film more. Mm-hmm. John Carpenter has quickly become one of my favorite, just all around storytellers, man. He's just so good. And this one's really cool. In fact, I think you're going to like it even more because it leans into that sort of dystopian, but also like...
Oh, we're living in it, bro.
You're right. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that, right? So for those that haven't seen it, mm-hmm. it's like this almost like crystal ball into a dystopian America, okay? The powers that be manipulate everyone through, you guessed it, the magic of media and capitalism.
Project Mockingbird.
And they basically have, there's these like sort of sneaky aliens that are pulling the strings behind the scenes. But the cool thing is you can, so in other words, all these people, let's just say Americans and humans or whatever on Earth, mm-hmm. are surrounded by this alien race. And you can't, they look just like us. There's no way that you could tell the difference, really. They travel via like these like wrist watches and stuff. I mean, it starts to get pretty crazy. But the way you can actually end up seeing them mm-hmm. is through these magical sunglasses. Hmm. Now, the thing that they never tell you about is where do these glasses come from?
Yeah,
what makes them so special?
Yeah.
How do they work? You know, if aliens are running the show, then why are these sunglasses being manufactured by the truckload? And then, oops, they tipped over and this guy just happens to get a pair.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's like this strange sort of cat and mouse thing. But I mean, dude, one of the best things about this movie is freaking Roddy yeah. Piper yeah. is the main character, man.
Yeah, I was like a huge fan of him as a kid.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? There's sort of this like, I mean, I guess it's kind of an urban legend at this point, but there's this like, this sort of story that's gone around, and I've tried to look into it, and it's actually pretty difficult to like track anything down. But the idea is basically that in Vietnam, they were trying to integrate, like, you know, basically using like infrared, like in the field. Mm-hmm. And they were trying out like different technologies at the time. And as we all know, all these technologies come from the Roswell crash in 1947. But no. So they ended up like outfitting this crew of like, you know, I don't know if it wasn't like a full like platoon or anything, but it was like these like helicopter crew, and they gave them these infrared goggles, and I can't remember, it's something about like they were red or blue spectrum. I can't remember the details, but basically the urban legend is that these guys were using these goggles, which they, the military would go on to like ban and completely, you know, get rid of all of them within like, you know, 6 months or something. But when they first tried them out, like apparently, I mean, the story goes that like they're literally seeing like demons like flying, you know, or what we would sort of describe as like demons, like huge, man, like bat wings and stuff, and these like sort of demonic looking things. They're just like flying, like filling the skies. And it said that like it drove like a lot of these dudes like totally nuts. And like, you know, they're firing off like the 50 cal, like the machine gunners are just like firing at these things. And like, you know, of course nothing's happening. But like the theory is that like it was almost able to like see in between like frequencies or
spectrums and stuff.
Yeah, it's like sort of, you know, cross spectrum kind of stuff. There's like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of sort of technology in that. And I've talked about my own UFO experience with my best buddy, Jesse Phillips, back in fifth grade. And we were basically seeing this UFO, and it was my fifth grade birthday. And the only way that we would see it is like when we were laying in we were camping out in the front yard, and we're looking through like the screen, like the mesh of like the tent flap. But then we would be like, whoa, dude, did you see that? And we would jump up, you know, unzip it and stick our heads out, and it would be totally gone. But then we would get back in and close it. And like, I don't know, something about like the mesh, like the fibers, like crossing mm-hmm. was like sort of, I don't know, allowing us to like see this thing. And it is pretty cool because like, in the last like several years, I've read like numerous things where it's, you know, there is something to that, like being able to like see like certain things like through like different mm-hmm. like filters or like filtering like you know, lenses or whatever, which is pretty fascinating.
I know we've talked about something like that before on the show, and I know we've kind of talked about like the visible light spectrum and percentage of what we actually use and it being such a small amount and stuff. It's super fascinating. And even you talking about that, and I don't know, maybe it's because you've mentioned it to me before, but like the soldiers over in Vietnam, kind of, you know, witnessing something like that. I feel like I've read something about that recently. And all in all, man, like, I don't know if you're, well, I don't know. Of course I know. I know you're just like this. And those listening, again, it comes back to that idea that we have here, which is that would be rad, even in so much as it just being a pretty cool premise for a movie.
Oh, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man, because I love those kind of movies that blend, especially like a historic time like Vietnam or World War II or one that I just recently watched that Dan told me about, our buddy Dan told me about, was called Overlord.
Hmm.
You know this movie?
I don't think so. It's an 80s movie?
No. This is a new movie, and it was made in like 2018. And basically, the premise is this small group of American soldiers they go behind enemy lines on D-Day. They kind of uncover these crazy Nazi experiments, and we'll just say the result of these experiments.
No, I think become, I've seen this.
It's a J.J. Abrams, dude. I'd never, like, I remember kind of maybe seeing a poster. I don't think I ever saw a trailer. Yeah, it's really cool, man.
Because I remember Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell's son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting movie, dude. Like, it's entertaining. It's fun. It's, if you're into zombies, I mean, there's some super, you know, it's definitely rated R for a reason kind of thing. It's not something that I would watch with kids or anything like that, but it is, it's super cool. And again, it is also an example. I mean, there's plenty of these movies that exist that we've watched that we've loved. I mean, gosh, Interstellar. There's so many movies where, what's another one? Tenet. There's a lot of Christopher Nolan movies that you're just kind of like, wait, what?
Yeah.
How does that work? Or what was the one that I just recently, that we, oh, it was pre,
oh yeah, we just
Predestination.
Predestination.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I had to kind of go back and be like, well, what does that mean? Like, how did it work?
Oh yeah, that's
and sometimes in a way that's kind of like, it's only annoying when the ending like sucks, you know? It's never annoying when it's just kind of like, man, that's amazing, but I want to make sure I understand what happened here.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's kind of how it was for me in Predestination. And in fact, looking it up sort of enhanced it. I'm like, wow, okay. You know, Jordan Peele, I think, is one of those that he's got like sort of like the backbone of the movie is entertaining enough. You don't need to look up stuff. It's just like, oh man, that's really cool. But when you do start diving in and uncovering all these like Easter eggs he leaves behind, you know, I'm thinking of specifically in the movie Us, at the very beginning of the movie, he basically foreshadows the entire thing just in the first like 60 seconds of that sort of camera shot.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, dude.
It's kind of like, there's another movie, which I don't know if you guys ever watched it, but it was called like In the Shadow of the Moon. I'm such a huge fan of that movie. Like it's so good. I know I've told you to watch it like 100 times, but
oh yeah. Dude, I started this movie and it was like I could tell it was one that I needed to like dedicate paying attention to. But I got about halfway through and I was like, man, this is really good.
Dude,
it's
awesome.
Didn't get far enough to where I know what the heck's going on really.
Yeah. It's really good. It kind of has that like Predestination kind of vibe. Yeah.
I think all in, like the theme of this is if you write a good enough story, you have characters that the audience can care about. You have something cool, like a cool factor, time travel, aliens, cyborgs, whatever, space. Then you don't really have to get specific with like the mechanics of how it all works.
Yeah.
I think there's plenty of movies where perhaps they lean on that too heavily, and then ultimately you're just like, this movie sucks, man. It's not even, you know, and I can't think of, like, can you think of one offhand where it's just like, that doesn't make any sense? I mean, for example, dude, speaking of time travel, like Hot Tub Time Machine, there's no, like, they accidentally spill an energy drink yeah. onto a hot tub's like electrical system. It just happens to be time, and they go back in time.
I thought the first one was like pretty funny though.
Dude, it's the best. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, you don't have to really kind of explain everything.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you just can get too far into the weeds, man.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. I mean, we've talked about this sort of theme before on the podcast, but like, you do kind of like lose the magic a little when like things are like over-explained. In the comics, when you find out like Wolverine's real name was John or something, and he's like, he had like the bone claws originally, and like...
I don't like it.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. It just, it sort of takes away that like mystery, which kind of kills it for me.
And I think maybe it could be true that some folks like really like that idea in terms of the origin, but I feel like once you like pigeonhole it, there's no going back, man.
Yeah.
And so like, why do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say like, I am guilty of like I'm the person who would like want to find out some stuff like that, but then it's like, I know that it would totally ruin it for me, you know?
Yeah. Well, dude, I know we ended up kind of talking about something relatively unplanned this week because you're not feeling too well, but I'm glad on behalf of all the listeners, but me as well, thank you for, you know, braving it and putting your voice through a little extra trouble for us to be able to get another episode out there.
Yeah, man. You know, I couldn't let down our friends and family, and I'm glad I did because it was a cool episode. I love talking about this, you know, sort of the things that happen like outside of the veil of like pop culture or these like movies that are so beloved by all of us. If you want to find us online, head over to Instagram, shoot us a DM, tell us how much you enjoy the show. We always love to hear that kind of stuff. If you want to tell us about your own, maybe sort of paranormal encounter you've experienced or urban legends in, you know, like in your town that you grew up in or things that you heard about in the 80s that you think maybe we'd be into, feel free to shoot us, like I said, a DM on Instagram, or if it's more long form, head over to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. Even better, if you wanted to say it in your own voice and maybe hear that featured in an upcoming show, head over to thatwouldberadpodcast.com, where you can leave a voice memo, you can leave a 5-star review, you can find a podcatcher to listen to us, all the things. And we really appreciate it. Get out there, tell one single friend about the show. It does wonders. Like I said, leave a 5-star review. That also does wonders to sort of tweak the algorithm so more people will... be exposed to us. If you're just not getting enough That Would Be Rad on the free feed, head over to our Patreon, The Rabbit Trail, where it's more of what you love. It's a little looser, a little goosier, and it's a way that you guys can show your support sort of in real time, and we're so grateful for it. You got anything else, Woody?
I think that's it, man.
Right on. Well, we love you, we appreciate you. And as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes. My favorite song on
I just needed some sunshine. You were already dead before you became a ghost. You always said our future would be a parade of flowers, but now all that's left is a single rose. That's the way it goes.
We'll send that over and I'll get it back to you before I go back to bed.
Sounds good, pal. All right, get bro. Some rest, man. Drink lots of water.
Yes, sir.